Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast hosted by me, Andrew Levins, today joined by two beautiful guests. So we've got Joel Zammit, we've got Jackson Bailey, and at no point am I going to be confused by the combination of those names. We are talking about some comic books this episode. Zammit will be wrapping the episode up today by talking about Kang. I will be in the middle talking about Fist of the North Star.
Ooh.
And Jackson, how are we starting this episode off?
We're going to start by talking about my favorite ever Hellboy comic. Well, I would say this is probably the best Hellboy comic, which I know is a massive claim because there's fucking tons, but this is... I think the best one ever, and I think there's a lot of really interesting reasons for that, but anyway, we'll get into them. So it's a comic called Hellboy the Corpse. It was, when was it published? 1995, I think. It's written by Mike Mignola, illustrated by Mike Mignola, and it was originally published as two-page installments in Capital City Advance Comics catalogs. So it wasn't initially released as like a full comic or even as like issues of a comic. They were just two pages every time. And there's an interesting thing, or like, I don't know, it's not an interview, but it might be like a little paragraph Mike Mignola wrote about it in a collected work where he's like, I had to make something interesting happen every two pages. And he's like, and that was such an interesting thing to do because I couldn't just release two pages where there was no climax at the end. So every two pages you had to be like, oh, I can't wait for the next issue of Capital City Comics or whatever the fuck. And so what you end up with is this really engaging, like minute to minute, page to page comic that you kind of can't put down. So the basic premise is, for whatever reason, Hellboy is in Ireland, I think, and there's a woman who's like, my baby's a changeling. You gotta help me, Hellboy. It's not my real baby. So Hellboy picks up the baby with some iron tongs, and it turns into a little goblin. And he's like, where's the real baby? And the goblin or whatever is like, you gotta go to this crossroads, and you'll get your baby back. So Hellboy goes to the crossroads. There's a great bit of paneling. It's like some of the best. Oh, I love it so much, where at the crossroads, it's like the husband and wife are like, oh, Hellboy, that's a place where they hanged prisoners back in the day. And Hellboy's like, oh, okay. They're like, we don't go there. But he's like, oh, gotta go there anyway. And there's like just some great paneling where he's standing there. There's like the bough of a tree over the crossroad. It strikes midnight. There's all of a sudden a corpse at the, like, hanging off the tree. It strikes another there's another strike of the bell or whatever. And the corpse points in a direction and he's like, oh, thanks, man. And it leads him to these other two fairies or whatever, and he's like, hey, I need the baby back. And they're like, yeah, you can get the baby back. But here's the deal. This is an old dead guy, and he's got to be given a proper Christian burial. Can you take him to one of three churches and get him a proper Christian burial? And then Hellboy straps this corpse to his back, and he has to go through these three churches to find the appropriate one to bury the guy in. And it's just this great story, and it's got this great element of just like stuff's not really happening for any reason that you can comprehend. Like Hellboy's absolutely playing by the rules of the fae folk in this story, where he's like, to get a baby back, I need to deliver this corpse to the right church. That's like the sequence of events. And I won't spoil it because I think it's really good. And it's not a very long comic either, so it's like absolutely worth reading. But it's beautifully illustrated. It's Mike Mignola at his best, I think. Like I said, beautifully paneled. And it also kicks off, like so many other Hellboy stories, it kicks off so much stuff that happens in the future. Like it's all of these early stories. I don't know if Mike Mignola ever like intended it when he wrote them, but all of these early stories have this like, oh, it's just some stuff happening. And then, you know, miles down the track, you're like, oh, damn, all of that shit was so absolutely relevant to, like, the way this story was going to wrap up. And all of these characters come back, and I think it all comes back in, like, Darkness Calls or something, whatever that later issue was.
I think Wild Hunt as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yes, yeah. True. I think a lot of this kicks off Wild Hunt because that guy gets trapped as a little pigman.
Yes.
Hey, he's not happy about it. And that causes Hellboy a lot of problems. So many of the comics are like that. Hellboy shoots out fucking the Baba Yaga's eyeball because he's mad at her. Causes him a lot of problems down the track. Shouldn't have done that. Yeah, so this kicks off a lot of stuff like this. It's like it's kind of seeped in this deep lore, but it was clearly written because Mike Mignola just had to fill some sort of space in a sort of magazine. He, as well, initially was like, this is the worst comic I've ever read. He hated it when he first published it. He was like, what am I doing? But it's very slowly become sort of known as one of the kind of greatest Hellboy comics I think ever released. It's sort of like where it's certainly up there. It's sort of like a top tier.
Yeah, I think all comic. My favorite Hellboy stories have that road movie quality to them.
Absolutely.
Where it is just Hellboy kind of like just falling into a series of events that he needs to find himself out of.
For sure. Like, there's no real reason why he's anywhere. He's just there, necessary for the story. There's no setup or anything. And I think some of the later Hellboy comics where it would be Hellboy and the BPRD, and it would sort of start off with, Hellboy, we need you to go and investigate the woods or whatever. Lost a little bit of that because he wasn't just doing that kind of traveling, wandering, monster hunter kind of thing that
the early
comics have. Yeah,
the final Hellboy story, Hellboy in Hell, totally returns to that style of storytelling.
Like, absolutely, I think it's like, you know, incredible.
It's like, yeah, the road movie, except the road he's traveling down is hell.
Absolutely, it's great as well because it's like an evolution of that one, that traveling guy kind of thing, because I don't know, there's so much extra weight to it. He's finished his adventuring life on Earth, and now he's in Hell, but he's found himself in the same sort of situation. It's kind of like a great loop, but this version of the cycle has all of this extra context, which I really love. Hellboy in Hell, when I first read it, I really didn't like it, but on a reread, I was like, oh, damn, this, like, I was so stupid the first time around. this is incredible. There's a new comic coming out.
You're going to convince me to read it all again.
Oh, dude. Every single time I start reading it, I'm like, well, back to the beginning. Time to do it again.
The thing is, I don't like the beginning of Hellboy. I should skip that first story.
I absolutely know what you mean. Like, those kind of really early ones, like it's like a lot of him going into a castle and fighting a Nazi, and it's a bit tongue-in-cheek and a little bit silly or something.
He's way too quippy, and I feel like the movie only read that and was like, cool, Hellboy's
that's
a quipster.
Hellboy.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time, Jack, you're like, Hellboy, I'm like, it sounds so good, and I do the same thing when I'm like, all right, I'll start, and I don't know why in my brain I'm like, I gotta start from the start, and I think I've read that, like, first few, like, issues or, like, chapters of, like, the first,
which
like,
Mignola didn't
Hellboy.
Even write. Mignola did the art. It was
really?
And the story was scripted by, who's a very famous 80s DC writer who wrote a bunch of John Byrne. John Byrne.
Yeah, John Byrne. John Byrne.
He did the script.
And the kind of unfortunate thing as well, though, is that a lot of the, like, not a lot, but definitely some of the lore of those early Hellboy comics does get folded into it sort of like down the track. So you're like, it's good to read it once.
Definitely.
The context later on. Like when, what's his name? The guy who's just a head with gorillas? With the cry gaff or whatever?
Yeah.
When he turns up later in like a BPRD story, so you could be like, oh, there he is. That's what happened to him. Okay. Or like I forget what it is. I think this is one of the later stories where they bump into Lobster Johnson on, it's like the ghost of Lobster Johnson on a hill. And they, I don't know. Anyway,
so the
Mignola universe, it's also like just filthily connected within itself, that reading everything gives you so much more depth to it. But you also don't, you never have to, you know what I mean? But like, man, reading all of the Sir Edward Grey Witchfinder comics, and then when Hellboy arrives in Hell and meets the Witchfinder, and he's like, yeah, I got sent to Hell and then torn apart, and then little goblins sewed me back together, so this is what I look like now. And you're like, how? When did that happen? What happened to you, Sir Edward Grey? Jesus. Although I think there's a comic coming out being released within like maybe a month or so that's Sir Edward Grey Acheron or something, which is explaining that. So I'm excited for that as well.
How I got sewn back together by little goblins.
Yeah, well, that's it's just such an...
Finally! Like, we finally find out how!
Like the most recent issue of Sir Edward Grey, and I'll talk about that at some point as well, because my absolute favorite Mignola comic ever is Sir Edward Grey Mysteries of Unland. I love
I haven't read that, so I'll read that on your recommendation. And did Mignola write that, or is it one of the ones that
Great question. I don't know.
You don't know who wrote your favorite comic.
I know, yeah. What am I doing?
Just skip all the credits and just go to the meat of the book. Cares? That's what we do here. I got no time to quickly glance at an author or writer.
No, it's not written by Mignola. It's written by Kim Newman and Maura McHugh. But
yeah, right. They're not familiar to me at all.
I don't know what else they've written either. But like, it's just such a great story. I've got so much time for it. It's beautifully illustrated. Wonderful. But I find that there's this weird with the Sir... And I love the Sir Edward Grey Witchfinder comics as well. They're these stories of this occult Victorian detective in the Hellboy universe or whatever. But they start off quite good. Then you get the one that's kind of like less great, that's kind of like just like a throwback to... You know when a comic is like a love letter to a specific genre? And you're like, that's great, but like it's not... Within the context of this character, it feels kind of out of place. So the second one is like a love letter to the Western for some reason, like to old Western comics. And you're like, oh, that's fine, but weird. Then you have Unland, and then it's kind of diminishing returns. And the most recent one was pretty disappointing. All throughout all of the Witchfinder comics, they're like, hey, he was the Queen's official occult detective until the real identity of the Jack the Ripper was revealed or whatever. And every comic is like that, and you're like, fucking hell, what's that going to be? But they made that comic, and it was very disappointing. The answer is some guy. So who cares? But yeah, so for that to be the last place you see Edward Grey, and then the next place to be in Hell, in Hellboy in Hell, is a shock. But yes, look, Hellboy the Corpse, it's I can read that again and again and again. It's the kind of comic I can read once, finish, and then literally just go back to the start and read again, because I got that much time for it.
Maybe a good first Hellboy story for people to read.
Oh, I would absolutely say it's a great introduction, because you don't need to know much. You just need to, you get everything, you get kind of the best of Hellboy in it. Like you said, you get that kind of like traveling Hellboy, you get the... there's a quote by Mike Mignola that I really love, where he says that every good kind of mystery or supernatural story needs to be a little bit like make not sense.
Perfect. Yeah. You couldn't have said it more perfectly.
Couldn't have said it more clearly. But it needs to be like a little bit inscrutable. And this has that element as well, where it's like, to get the baby back, you got to bring this guy to a church. That's it. And then like each church doesn't want him, and that's sort of, he's got to do it before dawn. For no real reason, that's just the rules of the universe, you know what
I mean?
It's just
like, yeah, you just have to do this thing because you've been told.
This is how it works. You have to do this thing because you have to do this thing. And that's how you'll get the baby back. Mm. And then he'll go to a church, and he'll be like, right, let's try and bury you here. And then the, you know, statues in the church will come to life and be like, no room, no room. And he's like, all right, we're not going there, fuck. Dude, I don't think they want you. And you also have that, you have like, because Hellboy has this great dialogue with the corpse on his back, where he's just very like, again, like good Hellboy comic. He's conversational. It's funny without being quippy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if it does hook you, it sets up so much stuff for later comics that makes them all the richer for reading, I think. So yeah, look, as a big Mignola fanboy and a big Hellboy universe fanboy, I love it. Read Hellboy the Corpse. It's in a lot of collected works as well, which is good. It's like the kind of comic that just turns up in Hellboy collections.
They released a collected version of it for 25 cents before the first Hellboy movie came out.
Well, there you go. If you can find that, fuck.
I dare say it's worth a lot more than 25 cents now.
But if you can find it for 25 cents, holy shit. Yeah, so look, I really recommend that. And read Mysteries of Unland as well, because that comic's
Yeah, I will, man. Awesome. That's good. If you are reading all the, like, hearing all these great recommendations, and, like, you know, the thought of reading all of the Hellboy universe is something that appeals to you, the best way to do it from a cost-effective point of view is through Dark Horse Digital. They do amazing sales, usually around the time of their, like, anniversary, which I think may have just passed recently. But don't worry, guys, because very soon they do, I think, 60% off their entire catalog around the time of, like, the Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales in November. Yeah. And they, the Dark Horse Digital does a thing that no other digital publishers do, where they bundle a bunch of trades or issues together, and you can buy them for a reduced rate already, and then you can stack the discount on top of that. So you can read, it's pretty achievable to you know, for obviously you're still paying quite a lot of money to read everything, but it'd be a damn big discount on trying to buy it all physically or at a non-reduced digital price. So,
well, I think one of the benefits of the Hellboy universe is that, like, obviously there's Hellboy and there's the Hellboy comics, but then you also have the BPRD comics, you also have Witchfinder, you also have Lobster Johnson, so you can kind of pick a section of the universe to spend some time in to, like, get a feel for it, instead of, you know, instead of being like, I'm going to buy all of Hellboy, being like, well, I'm just going to start with Witchfinder and read my way through that and see if I like it. Or I'm going to start my way with, you know, depending if you're more interested in a Victorian occult detective or a sort of, like, deranged 1940s pulp superhero, whatever you're looking for, you can kind of find it. Awesome. Also, hey, if you want more Mignola stuff, goddamn, read Baltimore, because that's fucking good too. It's not Hellboy, but oh man.
And is that an anthology or no? It's
sort of like a complete other universe about a guy. It's incredible. It's, again, probably
save it for another episode, Jack.
Is this the Joe Gollum one?
Yeah, same as the Joe Gollum universe.
Okay, I read some Joe Gollum stuff. Mm. Okay, cool. Mm.
I love Joe Gollum.
Anyway, I love it. Read Hellboy the Corpse. It's great. I'm gonna read all of Hellboy again now after this episode. It's gonna happen. I'm going. I'm diving back in.
He's doing it.
Can't stop me.
So that's Jack's take on Hellboy the Corpse, and now we're all going to read Hellboy because of his review, so hopefully everyone else listening is going to as well. I have been reading I've been churning through, as mentioned last week, been churning through the Berserk Deluxe Editions. They are still huge, but I get through them at a frightening pace, today I realized that not only are they, like, beautifully vinyl bound, but they also come with, like, a ribbon bookmark in the middle of them, which is very classy, very good. Also very relieving, because I've been, you know, this is like Berserk, you know, medieval fantasy, heaps of demons and occult stuff, and, like, it's a pretty gross feeling book overall. The world is disgusting and evil. And I've been using as a bookmark a Polaroid of my family, and trapping my family in the pages of Berserk.
That's terrible.
That's don't want that. Don't do that. That's just bad juju. Yeah,
that's absolutely cursed.
Staring the cold, dead eyes of Nosferatu Zod. just dead in the eyes. So, yeah, I'm very, very relieved to know that there's a built-in bookmark in these collections. But I gave myself a small break from Berserk because I got a package from Viz Media, and in it was the latest hardcover collection of a legendary manga series from the 80s called Fist of the North Star. Have you guys heard of this enormous franchise?
I have heard of it. Yeah. I don't know anything about it, but the name is familiar.
Yeah, back when I, like, you know, would have been like the early 90s or whatever, I think when my brother was just, like, you know, liking manga and that kind of stuff, I remember seeing maybe trailers for, like, a Fist of the North Star manga.
Yep.
On some of, like, those, like, early, like, Akira kind of, like, VHS.
Yes, for sure. So this is, it came out originally in 1983. And it was published from then until 1988. There are 245 issues, and this collection collects the first 13 of them.
Oh.
It is set in a post-apocalyptic Earth. Because at some point in the 90s, there was a big post-apocalyptic event and a big nuclear war. And so we have one of the lone survivors of that, Kenshiro. And he is someone who has been studying a deadly martial art called Hokoto Shinken, which gives him the ability to kill his opponents by striking their secret vital points. And this means that it's kind of like Mad Max, where there are like there's, you know, fuck all water and food left in the world anymore, and he quickly like gets this guy Ken we get introduced to him getting thrown into a prison cell and then befriending like a gross kid. And the kid him kind of team up to like break out of the jail cell and fight a bunch of gangs. And it is one of those like, you know, things where like you see you get introduced to like all these violent gang members. The main gang, they're all represented by different suits of cards. So there's like the King of Crowns, the King of Clubs, King of Spades, and they have like a spades tattoo on their face, and then like a big axe or a big chain that they kill everyone with. And so you see them like do a bunch of heinous shit to like the locals that are just doing what they can to survive, kill a bunch of old people just for laughs, steal all the women. And then Ken rocks up and will like touch them on like very like block their weapons and then like touch them three times on their forehead and then be like, you have 3 seconds to live. I wonder how will you spend them? And then their head explodes.
That's so funny.
It is a phenomenally stupid story, and I am enjoying the hell out of it. But yeah, because he has on his chest, he has these scars, and you learn that the yin to his yang, they both studied different types of this martial art. One of them is like the one that Ken wants, and his polar opposite, his rival who stole his girlfriend. He's the only person that can take that Ken's martial arts is useless against, and so his rival is the one who gave him these scars, and he gave him these scars by like basically poking his finger into his chest a bunch of times, and so it looks like the Southern Cross, kind of like he has like a constellation of stars on his chest. So this is written by Buronson, and art by Tetsuo Hara, and this is like one of the biggest media franchises in the world, like in history. Like it make like millions and millions of dollars. Do you ever like, there's one of my favorite Wikipedia pages is like the list of highest grossing media franchises.
I've never been there. My favorite Wikipedia page is list of Pepsi variations.
Oh, very good.
I love that page.
Do you reckon how many of the top five media franchises do you think you could guess?
I reckon I couldn't.
Could you guess the one that has made over $105 billion?
Because I was thinking in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe like go to movies like Avatar. But I'm like, no. That was like one film. We're talking like franchises. Like Simpsons has got to be up there, right? Surely.
Good question. Yeah.
Simpsons is not in the top 20.
Surely. Jeez. Star Wars? Surely?
Yeah.
Star Wars definitely is. Just to give you an idea, Simpsons has made $15 billion.
Oh, at least 15.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Can you think of the franchise that has made $105 billion?
I'm thinking like, yes, got to be like Star Wars, Star Trek.
So Star Wars made 68, almost the magical 69 billion.
Yeah.
That was Star Wars.
It's the fifth biggest media franchise in history. Above it, we have Mickey Mouse and Friends.
Oh, yeah, okay. For sure.
Winnie, not Disney, just Mickey Mouse. Like if you count Disney, Disney's everything. Winnie the Pooh is above that. Each of those has 80.3 billion. The top two are both Japanese franchises. One of them only exists to, and always has existed to, make merchandise first and foremost.
Yeah.
Do you know who that is?
Oh,
1974.
Oh, so I think check Transformers.
Yeah,
they're a bit lower down. Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
And number one from 1996 onwards. Does 1996 trigger anything?
Is it Pokemon?
Yes, it's Pokemon. Pokemon's the highest earning media franchise of all time.
Good for you, Pokemon.
Wow, that's crazy. I guess like it had that period of time in the 90s where like kids were like eating their own shit of a Pokemon. You know, like. Everyone was pissing their damn pants because of Pikachu. That's fair.
And I kind of get it. Like, you know, looking at Disney, we got like a black and white rat. But the 90s, we got like an electric rat. Yeah, and that's pretty nice, true. You know?
That's pretty cool.
So to give you an idea of how popular Fist of the North Star is, like obviously it's not in that top five. Mm. But I mean, like, it's so crazy. Just like, yeah, like, so from the Simpsons down, it goes Simpsons 15.6 billion. Above it is like Dora the Explorer and Peanuts. You know, Peanuts has been around since 1950 yeah, and to earn 16 billion. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is above Peanuts, which is very funny to me. But below the Simpsons, we have The Lion King, Super Sentai, so Power Rangers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Dungeon Fighter Online. I have no idea what that is. It's a South Korean thing. Pac-Man, Avengers, Looney Tunes. So they're all the $15 million club. Then below Looney Tunes on 14.8 is SpongeBob SquarePants. And earning the same amount as SpongeBob SquarePants is Fist of the North Star.
Cool.
How come we don't have Fist of the North Star memes?
Yeah,
this is bullshit.
Because the bulk of their earnings, 14.7 billion of their 14.8 billion earnings, come from pachinko sales. Pachinko is like a crazy Japanese gambling machine.
That's awesome.
How do we get into the gambling sector? How do we make a gambling machine?
Sans Pants Pachinko.
Pachinko, yeah.
Yeah, because of their, like, and what's great is, like, you know, James Bond, you know, famous gambler in as a character, but because of actual gambling licensed by Fist of the North Star, Fist of the North Star's made more money, 0.6 billion more money than James Bond has as a franchise.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I guess we've got to get into gambling. All right.
I suppose so.
Okay, all right, we'll look into it.
So, yeah, this first volume, Fist of the North Star, like I said, it's an absurdly hilarious story with wonderful, gory art in a way that, like Berserk is, like, incredible artwork that's also very gory, but is like makes you feel queasy, but is also like tremendous art. Like it's, you know, this is the kind of thing that you could see blown up on canvases or like on like a fucking cave. You know, it's like there's something very like forever about the Berserk artwork. Yeah. This is like just hilarious. Like all of the art in Fist of the North Star is like, while totally like talented and well structured, there's just something so funny, like a really really violent G.I. Joe. This definitely is the manga that inspired JoJo's Bizarre Adventure as well.
Yeah, okay.
And this first volume is just like, yeah, like it's a awesome colored hardcover collection. Like the cover, sorry, is colored. The most of it is most of the interiors are black and white, but occasionally you'll get a few pages that have this excellent red tint to them. And you better believe that red tint is used for blood or sunsets.
Oh, yeah. That's great. I love that kind of highlighting.
So, yeah, I'll be like, and it's also like because of how like simple the premise of it is, you know, just like a very good martial arts guy, you know, walks from one destination to another, killing all the bad people in his path. It's the kind of thing that I can read. I think they're releasing like maybe like three or four volumes of this a year. And I don't really need to like do like a like, oh, quick, I've got to read the first volume again so I can remember what the fuck happened. It's like, oh, yeah. He just like put his hand in a bunch of people's heads and they exploded.
Probably the same thing that is going to happen is what happened previously. Yeah. I notice he's just literally dressed like Mad Max as well. That's great.
Yeah, totally. Very road warrior. Like, leather.
Like, isn't it like that picture you showed us before? It looked almost identical.
Yes, like, definitely. Yeah.
That's good. That's great. Love it.
Yeah. If you love Mad Max and always want to read, you know, there's not much, considering how popular Mad Max is as a long running franchise. I wonder if it shows up on this Wikipedia page.
I was on the. No, it doesn't. I moved on to the Pepsi variations wiki. I'm looking at Pepsi Hot Chocolate.
What the fuck? Why is Jumanji is on this list?
What?
2.24 billion.
That's crazy. That's too much.
Good for you, Jumanji.
Yeah. Wow. Why?
A lot of board game sales.
Yeah.
Nah, it's mostly just the movies.
Yeah.
Movies, DVD.
Yeah, no one's playing the Jumanji board game.
It was a picture book originally, right?
To Jumanji. So, like, what's
everyone gets it, being like, oh, sweet, I'm going to go to, like get away from my family and go to the jungle finally. Oh, I just rolled a dice.
Damn it.
Monkeys are attacking. What? Oh, yeah. I got to move my health tracker. Oh, big whoop.
Is Magic the Gathering? Where's Magic the Gathering? It's not. Where's Magic the Gathering?
I had a Jumanji board game when I was a kid. It had that little thing in the middle, that little dome, and you held a card over it and it revealed what was on the card, which was kind of cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was all right.
I wonder how much R&D went into that and if they made their money back.
Yeah.
Probably.
You can still, I mean, if you go into a Target now, there's always a Jumanji board game. I don't know if you can play as Kevin Hart or The Rock, but bullshit. You should be able to. You should be able to become them.
Was there a Jumanji like video game tie-in?
Surely.
If that not, would... that was a missed opportunity, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, probably not, because it would have been dog shit. But, you know, if they had put a little bit of care.
Yeah, so there is one.
There's one called Jumanji the video game, but that tied into... Because, like, I've never seen the new Jumanjis, and I know I should rectify that. I know that they're beloved, you know.
Look, me neither. I have not seen them. So
because it's not a board game anymore. It's a video game. You get put into a video game. So, yeah, there is Jumanji the video game. Came out in 2019.
Are the reviews good?
They are, according to Steam, mixed.
Well, look, my review of Fist of the North Star, not mixed. I loved it. Mm. It's stupid. It's good fun. And I can see why it is maybe not a many, many billion dollar franchise. But then again, I've not played the pachinko machines. So maybe that's the key to loving it. Can I truly enjoy this series if I haven't lost thousands of my own dollars on the pachinko machines?
Yeah. I don't think so, dude.
Yeah, no. Like an experience.
So coming up very soon, we have Zamit talking about Kang. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thanks, sponsors.
Thanks, sponsors.
Now, thank you.
Last week, Zamit took years off our lives as he reviewed two issues of an X-Men series.
Yes.
How many issues of Kang are we reviewing today?
Look, there are two issues of Kang that are out, and look, I will just curtail it to the one.
Okay.
That way, because like I know I've been banned to talk about X-Men, and if the ban is in place, I can't really talk about issue two. So
that's lucky for us.
So it's lucky for everybody, you know, because there's a character pops up in issue two that I'm like, it's X-Men adjacent. So I will rate it in. I only talk about Kang issue one. So I don't really know much about Kang. Like, Kang is a very Avengers and Fantastic Four villain.
He's the conqueror.
He loves to conquer. And all I really know about Kang was from like the Loki TV series and like a quick Googling before, like, you know, hints of what Kang was gonna be. And it's just like, Kang is just some guy that's basically everyone in time.
Yeah.
He keeps basically going back in time to kind of like, you know, conquer as the moniker is. Mm-hmm. And then he's often defeated by often himself, which is always nice.
That sounds unimaginably frustrating. Like, if I was conquering and then I came up and was like, stop conquering, I would be like, motherfucker, I'm you. cannot be beefing.
His son is one of the young Avengers. One of Kang's sons became a young Avenger.
Well, no, one of Kang became one of the young Avengers. Right. That's the problem of Kang. It's never Kang's son. It's always Kang. It's just Kang.
God damn.
So I had no really expectations going into this, and I was curious to be like, oh yeah, I wonder what they're trying to do. Because I'm guessing Marvel are being like, look, Kang's coming up as the villain of the new Phase 4, maybe. So I'm guessing they're just doing this to kind of cash in on that, or to kind of like build up the hype, or to kind of like
remind
whatever they're doing in the Marvel MCU to kind of just make it the same for the comic books as well, so people can be like,
he shows up in a few arcs every year. People like people love Kang. He's like, if anyone was to have like a cult following in Marvel, Kang and Doom, they're like the two beloved antagonists.
So I highly recommend picking up Kang, because Kang the Conqueror, because it's a very surprising. It's a very good read.
So it was written by Colin Kelly with art by Jackson Lansing. And great covers by Mike Del Mondo, who is my favorite Marvel covers artist.
But yeah, it's a very interesting dive into just like who I guess Kang is, and it kind of goes from the start. And again, you don't have to know anything about a lot of the Avengers or the Fantastic Four, all that kind of other bullshit. Because again, reading about that after reading this, it was kind of like, okay, they're a bit divergent.
Yeah. Okay.
So it just seems that not only is it just Kang is a time traveler as everyone, Kang is also popping between multiple different realities.
Oh.
So it's just like the Iron Lad that was in the Young Avengers, for example, it was like Kang the Conqueror went back in time because some bullies were going to like slice his fucking throat and he stops them. And then Iron Lad's like, fuck this. And then he goes back and then he becomes Iron Lad because he's like, I hate myself in the future. Whereas this Kang the Conqueror opens up with him recovering after the bullies had already sliced his fucking throat. So, shit's kind of crazy from the word go, you know? It's just like, I don't know how good the future is if fucking bullies are slicing your throat. They should just give you a swirly, dack you maybe.
A future
that's
swirly.
Future swirly with a knife in your throat. You're like, okay, this seems a bit like, this isn't schoolyard japes. Okay, all right, here we go. So it starts off with the future, and again, everything like the future's like a utopia, but it's boring because nothing like happens. Everything is just like whatever, and so
no
it's just basically
getting slit.
Yeah,
he's like a sullen teen. He's just so grumpy, being like nothing's even good anymore. I don't even care, and so he becomes like a big old nerd and starts like researching a lot about history, like about say the Avengers, and so I think he's also his ancestors because he's Nathaniel Richard, so I'm guessing he's related somehow to Reed at some point. Or maybe, who knows, maybe he's actually Reed's dad. I don't know, and I want to find out. So he basically uncovers some library that is like all nerd shit about the past, and so he's like, what could I see about the Avengers? And then when like Kang, an older version of Kang, pops up and is like, oi, cunt, come with me, we're gonna rule the world or whatever. And he's like, okay. And so he grabs him, and then he just goes to like prehistory, like prehistoric times, and then he's just there, and he gets trained by Kang. And this older Kang is just like a bitter piece of shit. It's just like, he's like, I'm gonna train you up to do what I couldn't do because I keep failing because I'm a big fucking loser. And at some point, like, he's like, starts beating the shit out of like young version of himself, and he keeps getting drunk and being like, you gotta promise me one thing, don't ever love, don't fucking love. And then like he has this like drunken stupor of like dreams being like, I think what's her name, like Ramona or something, and he keeps like, my lost love Ramona. And so young Kang's like, shit. I think I've made some mistakes.
Prehistory with this, yeah, that's fair.
But then older Kang's like, shut the fuck up, this is what happened, these are my greatest defeats, learn from it. And so he's just like drilling into the a younger version, basically all his biggest fuck ups, which I'm guessing isn't great for like the psychology profile of say Kang. So he just kind of keeps doing this, and he keeps talking about Ravona. And then at one point, young Kang, he chuffs to like some area, and he finds like a forgotten tribe of humanity, like they didn't know existed, because this is set in the times of like basically dinosaurs, and it's like, we're training in this section here, and we have a limited time because the media's coming and it's going to destroy everything, but right now we're going to train, I'm here to train you up, and we're not going to be interrupted. But he finds like a lost tribe of humans, and he's like, sick, and they're fully accepting of him, they have a dance party, maybe, I don't know. I don't know if they have like an orgy or not, but they definitely have like a big old dance party. If this wasn't written by Marvel, they probably would have had a sweet prehistory orgy. But they have this like beautiful dance. He's like, he's having a fun time. He comes back and he's all like, guess what, old man Kang? I've had a fun time. And he's just like, yeah, I met a lady and I'm in love. And then just Kang loses it and just slaps the shit out of younger version and then goes and murders a whole tribe because he's a piece of shit. And then young Kang, of course, who was very sullen about this, is just very much like, well, fuck that. Fuck this piece of shit. I hate this cunt. Fuck him.
Yeah.
Steals his like space armor or his time armor or whatever and chuffs off into the future and leaves old shit drunk Kang to die with the media. Then he pops up in like ancient Egypt and then he's like, ah, shit, now I've got to fight another version of myself who becomes like Ramatut. I think, yeah, like a pharaoh at some point. And so he's like, ah, fuck. And that's where it ends.
That's a fun premise.
I read the second issue. So it's surprising to me that you said X-Men, because I read the second issue has him, because he's in ancient Egypt, it's him and the Moon Knight, but not Moon Knight, but like the original, the gods that inspired current day Moon Knight. Is that who he's fighting?
Yeah. It's like the same god, basically.
Oh, that's fine. How does the X-Men like the Moon factor Knight into that?
Oh, well, if you kept reading, you'll find out that he's fighting Ramatut because he's like, I hate this guy. Ramatut's like, I'm going to fucking kill you. He's like, hey, wait a second. You might be killing yourself. And he's like, good point. And so he kind of like is like, right, instead, I'm going to make you my Centurion, which I think is like another version of Kang that pops up in history, which is like the Scarlet Centurion. And then it's like Ramatut's like, right, we have to fight Apocalypse. And so they fight Apocalypse. And that's the connection to X-Men. But then, like, all other kind of bullshit happens. He falls in love with Moon Knight, or Lady Moon Knight, and he's just like, I hate myself. Kang's a piece of shit. How do I destroy him? Oh, I know. I'll summon the Fantastic Four. And so kind of he's like, basically orchestrating maybe some of Kang, like, older Kang's, like, defeats, which is nice. But then he's going like, right, I hate this piece of shit. How do I destroy him? I know. I'll bow down before Apocalypse and maybe we'll team up and get rid of him.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. It's kind of like a fun premise when you have a character who is everywhere at all times. I mean, like, I guess it's just, I was going to be like, to have one version of him be like, I got to stop the other version of me. But I feel like that maybe that happens in Kang comics.
Maybe probably a lot, to be honest. Yeah. I guess because Iron Lad's whole premise, I think, is just like, I don't want to grow up to become a piece of shit.
Yeah. Yep.
So I don't know how well this is going to be, or if it's going to be like a cyclical thing, like if it's going to be this thing where he ends up growing up to be that piece of shit that ends up going back in time to grab himself and then go to prehistory, which is probably like, you know, what would happen, I think, is it's kind of like you kind of read the tea leaves. You're like, oh, yeah, this is probably going to be a cyclical story where it's just like you end up becoming the thing you hate the most.
Yeah, for sure.
But who knows where this will go? And at least it's fun exploring like little bits and of like the Marvel history.
It is funny, isn't it? When a comic is like, we're going to go back to prehistory. It makes me think of when Batman got shot with the time gun, and he went back and DC did that fucking garbage.
That was fun. I liked that.
The time gun part was fun, but like the fact that the amount of ramifications it had are very annoying.
I loved.
Shut up, DC. Shut your mouth.
Caveman Batman, that ruled.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Caveman, then he became Pirate Batman. He just went through all of the like iconic time period. But then in Dark Knight's Metal, they were like,
oh, no. That sucks. I mean, a long time ago.
Some shit. Hawkman's a big monster man. Ugh.
Don't lump Scott Snyder's mess with Grant Morrison's
Batman is
majesty.
A portal because he touched all the right rocks. Jesus Christ.
I don't know. I'm enjoying this version of like Kang chuffing through time. And it is very interesting to look at. Like, I wonder how Marvel are going to like, I guess, explore their history, especially with Apocalypse, whose history's kind of already been explored and extrapolated against. Like, he's got this whole thing where he used to be like the island of Oroka and Krakoa, and there was like a big fight there between like Ameth or whatever, and that is before, I guess, there, all this Egypt shit. That's fair. That's fair. Look, I've stopped that.
That's all the time we have for today.
But there's also a point where I think Apocalypse fights Dracula, which was like,
okay, you're back. Which was
a great series that I really enjoyed back in the day, where it was just like Clad Akbar like hating vampires.
As soon as you say words that sound made up, the mic's
up. Say words that don't sound made up, like Dracula.
Apocalypse and Dracula, they're fighting, which is good. And then it was revealed that like Blink. Claire Ferguson was a descendant of Apocalypse for no reason. I don't know why they put that there, but they did.
That rules.
I love comics sometimes. They're just like, this is a cool story. Let's shoehorn some soap opera bullshit. Like, why? Okay.
So sure. my favorite Kang moments that I've read is his rivalry with Doom. And at one point, I don't know which, I think it was maybe in Matt Fraction's Fantastic Four run, which is underappreciated. He did FF and Fantastic Four at the same time. And everyone remembers FF because it had the Mike Allred art. Do you remember that? But it ended up, Fraction left it and then Allred finished it with his brother.
Oh, right.
It's a very, very messy time in Marvel Comics.
Huh. But there's a lot of them.
Yeah. But in his Fantastic Four run, I think, I'm pretty sure if I'm right, Doom kills Annihilus and kills Kang, so he becomes, it's like it's a Doom of a different version, killing another world's Annihilus and another world's Kang, and so he becomes Doom the Annihilating Conqueror.
Classic.
And so it's like just like a mashup of like three different costumes of like this, you know, Doom towering over everyone else, and the fans like shoot him in the head or something. Great stuff.
Yes. Yeah. See, my I guess like a knowledge of Kang often comes from, I think it was, I was like Seth Green and someone else. They did these kind of like, I think it was for Wizard magazine, but where they did these like little toys, like
prototype robot chicken stuff.
Yeah, and it was like all basically comics, but it was with the toys. It was like Toy Fair or something along those lines,
right?
And basically, Kang was just a big loser that just kept being defeated, and he was like always shocked, like, "What do you mean? I'm always going to be defeated?" And like him from the past or the future would come in, like, "Yeah, they're just going to like destroy us, dude. It sucks."
That's great.
And yeah, just like a big comedy of errors of him just tripping over his own feet.
There's a great Kang storyline in Ryan North's Squirrel Girl run, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Have either of you read that?
No,
I haven't.
That's a ton of fun.
I don't read a lot of Marvel comics, I'm realizing. For some reason, even though it most of the time infuriates me, I read a lot of, for like superheroes, I read a lot of DC. But it's just me reading issue after issue, tutting, as I'm like, what are you saying, DC?
You know, Grant Morrison writes, I remember whenever Grant writes Damian Wayne, they'll always make him say, like, TT, like, that's you. That's the same sound you make while reading a DC comic.
Reading Three Jokers, being like, what the fuck?
Why did you read that?
I don't know,
that was
dude.
Bad. I also read Three Jokers.
Dude,
why
so
did I do
bad.
That too?
Like, well, maybe they'll introduce
bad.
A fourth Joker.
God.
Wasn't that being planned for like 5 or 8 years or something?
Yeah,
we did this on an episode with Dusha, because Dusha's the DC apologist.
Yeah. Jesus shit, fucking
it's so bad.
Jokers.
It's God. Terrible. They're all terrible comics.
Hey, but the comics we talked about today, not terrible comics.
Yes. No, good, all good. Yeah, check them all out.
Go out there and check out Kang, Fist of the North Star, and Hellboy, Criminal Cases. Amazing Criminal Cases. Hellboy, the corpse.
Yeah, the corpse.
If you want to hear Jackson and Zammit, you can do so on many podcasts on the Sans Pants Network. They are Plumbing the Death Star, Base of Speculation, Thumb Cramps, and many others, all found at sanspantsradio.com. If you want to chat about comics, you can do so in the Sans Pants Discord in the Serious Issues channel. Maybe I'll start saying issues.
Serious issues.
We also have a Facebook group, which you can join at facebook.com/groups/serious issues. We'd love to see you there talking about comics, not movies. Guy who keeps making movie threads. I'm not going to approve any of them.
Yeah, no, thank you.
It's not a movie page.
So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye. Serious.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.